Oh, beautiful four spacious skies.
Nope.
I'll tell you what. $10,000? $10,000 bet?
Nope.
Corporations are people, my friend.
Nope.
This is a completely airtight kettle and mounted on the top of our car. So I'm running for office, for Pete's sake. I can't have illegals.
Nope.
I'm not concerned about the very poor. We have a safety net there.
Nope.
I like being able to fire people who provide services to me.
Nope! He's white. He's unscented. He's boring. Put the no back in November with our Mitt Romney Nope on a Rope, Soap on a Rope. This and other awesome political stuff only from BubbleGenius.com. We're Bubble Genius and we approve this message.
Who let the dogs out? Who?
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
And I feel that if we in public television can only make it clear that feelings are mentionable and manageable, we will have done a great service for mental health. Could I tell you the words of one of the songs which I feel is very important?
Yes.
What do you do with the mad that you feel when you feel so mad you could bite? When the whole wide world seems oh so wrong and nothing you do seems very right? What do you do? Do you punch a bag? Do you pound some clay or some dough? Do you round up friends for a game of tag or see how fast you go? It's great to be able to stop when you've planned a thing that's wrong and be able to do something else instead and think this song. I can stop when I want to, can stop when I wish, can stop, stop, stop anytime. And what a good feeling to feel like this and know that the feeling is really mine. Know that there's something deep inside that helps us become what we can. For a girl can be someday a lady, and a boy can be someday a man.
I think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful. Looks like you just earned the $20 million.
You're performing live in the USA and covering the whole wide world. This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Radio goes with life. A salt and pepper, a fork and knife. Radio goes with life.
Here we go!
And when he was asked what he'd actually do to cut the deficit, he said he'd eliminate funding for public television. That was his answer. I mean, thank goodness somebody is finally getting tough on Big Bird. It's about time. We didn't know that Big Bird was driving the federal deficit. How about that? Elmo too?
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
It is Thursday, October 4th, 2012, and this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob, that's Chez. We are brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. So your favorite bath and body products are right there for the purchasing, and buy them now. Boy, you know, these shows the last 8 weeks have been really great to put together. I mean, it's been really easy to put them together because there's never a lack of things to talk about, is there?
I would say no. I'm gonna give you the answers like Corbin Dallas does to Chris Tucker's character in Ruby Rod and The Fifth Element. I'm just gonna utter one word into the microphone. No.
Well, we had a hell of a debate last night on the television.
Yeah, I fell asleep during most of it.
Did you fall asleep?
No. Are you kidding me? I'm too freaking busy working my ass off. No, but it was. God, was it dull.
That's kind of what I thought you would say. I kind of I didn't think it was dull at all. In fact,
it was infuriating. I mean, it's odd that it can be dull and infuriating at the same time. Maybe it was infuriating because it was dull. I don't know.
I don't think it was dull at all. I mean, I think for me, the adrenaline was pumping so rapidly, and then that first question. And I mean, obviously, we've got a lot to talk about with regards to this, but I just want to walk you through sort of how...
I'm worried about you. I'm worried that you might be developing a Rich Lowry-style, like masturbatory thing when it comes to politics.
I'm developing one? Really? No, that ship has sailed, my friend.
I'm afraid that little stars, sparkles come out of the TV screen when you watch presidential debates, any presidential debate.
Any sort of politics. I'm glued to it. I just can't. I'm drawn to it like there's some kind of tractor beam pulling me in. I mean, first of all, I was really pumped up about watching it. I mean, I've been waiting for this. I don't know exactly why. I think all the debates are kind of like that. I was like that in 2004, 2008. Not so much in 2000 because I really wasn't actively covering politics, even though I was still interested in it. But the way I approach these things is on two different levels. One, what I should probably say about it, including fact-checking and also all the different other factors that go into analyzing a debate. And then also, I try to put myself in the mindset of the cable news people who will then be evaluating.
Do that if I were you.
Well, no.
There's not much in there.
Well, for better or worse, these guys are, and mostly for worse, these guys are writing the first draft of history. And those of us in the blogosphere and online reporting and things like that, we're also doing it to a certain degree, but I think they have an opportunity to create that narrative first. And so I'm always concerned with what they're going to say. Obviously, being media critics, we also have to kind of figure out what these people are going to say before they say it. And kind of anticipate how they're going to react. So in the case of the debate, when Jim Lehrer asked that first question about how would you create jobs? I mean, what's your plan to create more jobs? The president started into the speech that those of us who follow this stuff closely have heard a bunch of times. And 4 years ago, this was going on. There were 800,000 jobs a month being lost. And when I walked into office, it was in the midst of a big economic collapse, and there were all these things going on. The auto industry was about to fall apart, and that was fine. I mean, I felt okay. Well, this is Barack Obama. This is President Obama, the person who we've been following for many, many years now, since going back all the way back to 2004 and before. But then Mitt Romney answered, and the contrast was created. Right?
Yes.
He started talking, and he was good. I mean, that first response was really strong. I will give this to Mitt Romney. The first answer to that question, when he started talking about, he did two different personal stories. Someone, guy, woman grabbed me by the arm and said, please help me, Mr. Romney, help me find a job.
I thought that was amazingly contrived.
It was, but it was exact. But I'm speaking.
I get that from a political perspective, it's the thing to do. But no, it was that actually put me off. I liked better his, regardless of whether it was BS or not, his rundown point by point of what he plans to do.
Well, that's what he segued into. Is it number one?
Right.
I'm going to do
which
this.
Looked fantastic. A lot of it was crap, but it looked great.
Well, and again, I'm looking at this. I'm trying to put myself in the mindset of the people who are going to be talking about it afterwards, right? And I'm thinking everyone in the press pool. Everyone observing behind those Lucite desks on the cable news sets, they just all had a simultaneous orgasm.
Yeah, they just basically
said, oh, look at that. I mean, I'm thinking of all the, the usual suspects. I'm not talking necessarily about some of the more left-wing pundits. I'm talking about the hardcore, like the David Gregory types, the Chuck Todd types, the Chris Matthews types, who really kind of, first and foremost, look for political style points, things that they can talk about. And
that was Pujols stepping up and first at bat knocking it out of the park.
Yeah, well, that was right. And from a purely cable news political pundit point of view, Mitt Romney hit a home run with the very first question.
Absolutely.
Now, there are two layers to this. If you're going to examine it from a purely cable television performance point of view, then, well, Mitt Romney clearly won the debate. But then if you start peeling it away, and I watched the debate, and this goes back to your initial remarks at the top of the show, Chaz. I watched the debates twice. I watched last night twice.
Oh, dear God. Jesus Christ. What is with you?
But this is what I do for a living, you idiot.
I guess.
So I watched the debate once when it happened live, and then I watched it again on the MSNBC replay. And this was already through. The second time was already through the filter of getting everyone's reaction. You know, liberals screaming up and down the internet and Twitter and Ed Schultz and Chris Matthews going absolutely apoplectic over the president's performance and the Mitt Romney victory and the debate and la la. And I started to look at it again, and I'm going, you know what? This Barack Obama was no different last night than he was in 2008 against John McCain. The difference is last night he was up against a used car salesman who was obviously very polished, very fast, very on top of his game. And then 4 years ago, John McCain was a little bit more average. But there should have been no surprise whatsoever that Barack Obama is Barack Obama, and this is how he speaks during a debate. This is how he presents himself. On top of the strategy that obviously he doesn't, it's not, there are very few presidents, incumbent presidents, who get up onto a debate stage and start going for the jugular.
No, you're essentially just trying to keep up the status quo and run out the clock.
Well, that's right. That's right. It was a defensive strategy. But when you combine that with the president's natural style, and, you know, we can get into that now.
Because, yeah, but it's a crap strategy because you watch him today. And, you know, the clip that you played at the beginning, you watch how dynamic he has the potential to be. He can be, and how personable. I mean, one of the things that's kept him on top of the polls for a long time is the fact that he is likable. You know, yeah, he can be professorial and he can say and kind of hesitate a lot and that kind of thing, which can be a problem for a president. But overall, people like him. And I think they like him when he has fire. And last night there was nothing even approaching fire.
Yeah, but has he ever done that? Has he ever behaved like he does on the stump? Has he ever done that during a debate?
It doesn't matter. It's a matter of what's required at this point, or what may be required at this point. I want steady, don't get me wrong, and I'm not, you know, jumping out of my skin, panicking, or any of that kind of thing today, but I think that he is going to have to step up his game a little bit when it comes to that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he should have last night.
Well, don't get me wrong. I think there's room for improvement. I mean, no doubt about that. But I think by and large, the president that we saw last night, I mean, it shouldn't have been a surprise that he was going to be thoughtful and deliberate, that he was going to occasionally pause and consider things and construct his thought, and, you know.
One of the things that he had against him, and this is a couple people noticed this today, and I noticed it kind of right off the bat, is you really can't win against somebody who will essentially say anything. Mm-hmm. Who you have a sort of set idea of how you're going to the things you want to say about this person, the comments you want to make, the attacks you want to go on, and those attacks are based on everything that this person has set up to a point. When that person gets up there and then completely changes what they've been saying for the longest time and pivots, and it turns into, you know, you don't know who the hell you're talking to, kind of like what Barack Obama said today. That throws you off your game and makes it very, very hard to sort of land a blow. You know, my problem, of course, is that he didn't say, well, wait a minute, that's not what you've been saying all along. Where does all this come from? You know, everything that we know about you to be true, or at least according to what you have to say, what you've said about yourself and your plans, what we know to be true, you're now saying is not. And that's a real issue.
That's right. That's right. And I think there were clearly opportunities for the president to to go for it, to really go for the jugular and attack Romney on flip-flopping and his obvious series of lies, which we'll get into later. I think that's difficult if you're approaching a debate from the point of view of playing defense, of also pitching your record, of also trying to, remember the last thing that we had seen of Barack Obama on television prior to the debate was a big hunk of crap video from Tucker Carlson and Matt Drudge and Sean Hannity of him being angry and raw and being
that's exactly what it was, and that was the idea. Are you going to make the claim that that sort of threw him off his game? Because there are people saying that.
No, I don't think it threw him off his game. I think let's face it. I think that we're still in an America where a lot of people will have a lot of issues with, you know, the stereotypical, or at least to them, the angry black guy. I don't think President Obama could stand up on a stage and start shouting down Mitt Romney without, you know, a considerable portion of the country going, we knew it all along. That video from 2007 of him at the NAACP or whatever, that's him. He's Reverend Wright. He's just like Reverend Wright. He's that kind of character.
Yeah, but you don't have to get angry. But it's really don't. You know, Jesus, nobody did it better than Reagan. You know, there you go again.
Yeah, that's true. But there you go again. Well, I've got some things to say about there you go again. I think, by the way, that
Obama should have pulled out his gat and smoked Romney's ass. That's what I was waiting for. And then tipped a 40 on his corpse.
Yeah. Well, I mean, these are things that on two levels. First, the president's just not his personality. Secondly, I think it would be difficult for him to try to get away with something like that. I don't think it actually works. He didn't do it with John McCain. He certainly wasn't going to do it with Mitt Romney as a sitting president, on top of all of it. Yeah. But I think what's going to happen is we're going to see a very different Barack Obama in 2 weeks. Next week is the vice presidential debate. The week after that will be the second presidential debate. We're going to do one of these every week for the next 3 weeks. Isn't that fun?
Yep. You watched it with your blood pumping. I freely admit I watched it begrudgingly. I looked at it like a trip to the dentist. I watched it because I felt like I had to. I had no desire whatsoever to see it. And I think that part of it came from the circus, you know, the watching one side who you know was going to gloat and the other side, you know, get pissy, or both sides gloating and pretending that the other one didn't make any mistakes. And I already know, you know, since I do follow these things, I already have I'm not an undecided voter. I have a clear picture in my head who I'm going to vote for, and that's not going to change. And so the idea of watching this and just kind of going through the motions to me, aside from, you know, the sort of I shouldn't be surprised, and yet I kind of am, that Romney is so defiant when it comes to his willingness to just pull utter BS out of his ass.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I'm not surprised. So
we're actually going to get into that in the next segment. Quick break, back after this.
Show.
Yeah, so Jonathan Chait, one of my favorite political writers, wrote, Romney won the debate no small part because he's adopted a policy of simply lying about his policies.
Right, that's what I meant.
Probably the best way to understand Obama's listless performance is that he was prepared to debate the claims Mitt Romney has been making for the entire campaign, and Romney switched up and started making different and utterly bogus ones.
So basically, John Chait said exactly what I said. Yeah,
brand new ones. I mean, if you don't know which Mitt Romney is going to show up to debate, well, I guess you got to prepare to debate five different Mitt Romneys.
Right.
You know, and I think on top of all of that, you know, it's very easy to be slick and fast on your feet when you have no responsibility to the facts.
That's it, exactly. Yeah, when you have no responsibility to the truth, and you're, it's wonderfully liberating, I'm sure, when he's not tethered to reality at all. He mm-hmm. can, you know, it's, I think I you know, I jokingly said that Romney and Ryan's slogan should be the old Tommy Flanagan, John Lovitz bit, yeah, that's the ticket.
That's
but
right.
That really is kind of the way they are. They're, you know, they'll just make up anything. And since they'll do that, and since they don't give a crap about things like actual reality and facts, and then, yeah, that makes them very, very hard to sort of beat up on. It's like, you know, you're punching ghosts.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, it's again, you don't have to sit there and pause and think about what you're about to say when it doesn't matter what you're about to say. If the president's attacking you, or anyone's attacking you and saying, you know what, your tax cut causes a $5 trillion in deficit spending. You can say, well, no, it doesn't. No,
yeah,
it doesn't.
But that's exactly, yeah. Yeah. Your name is Mitt Romney. No, that's not true.
That's not true.
I'm sorry, what? You know, it would have been interesting if Larry had said that. Larry, you know, yeah. Governor Romney, I'm sorry, what? Nope, that's not my name. But it's not. It's not my name.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just
President,
so.
President Obama would like you to believe that my name is Mitt Romney. My name is not Mitt Romney.
I mean, it's remarkable that, I don't know. I mean, I don't think the president was planning to get up there and be the fact checker in chief.
I mean,
what would have happened, I think, if the president had taken the bait and become fact checker in chief, I think that entire debate, considering the format, and it was a totally free form format, which I think was kind of refreshing. It was really the most free form, and I mean, considering the source, the Republican side, one of the most substantive debates I've seen in a while.
Yeah.
Because it just kind of went. It went on, and the candidates really had an opportunity to kind of dig into these issues. But if the president had gone down that road of fact-checking what Romney had said, the whole thing, because of that format, would have de-evolved into sort of, well, you're wrong, no, you're wrong, no, you're wrong, no, you're wrong. And it would have been just, it would have been a debate entirely about fact-checking Mitt Romney. Because then Romney would have responded, it would have been mutually assured destruction. It would have been like an arms race of fact-checking. And nothing else would have been achieved. And even still, nothing much was achieved on the domestic front. I mean, I don't think they talked about abortion at all. They didn't talk about women's issues at all. They talked about the economy, strictly the economy. No other issues were kind of folded into the mix when they probably should have been. But I mean, what we know is that that occasionally the White House will take an approach where they will have one kind of assignment with regards to the message and delivering the message to voters. And then I think what they do is they often rely on people like us to do the fact checking and to say, yep, this is right, this is wrong. And kind of everyone has a different part to play in the process. Steve Bannon wrote a piece today about how there's a possibility that the success of Romney's performance last night could get overshadowed, much like Paul Ryan's convention speech did, by the mendacity issue.
Right. The fact checkers going through it and basically saying that, you know, the narrative becomes that, yeah, he looked slick, but he didn't tell the truth.
That's right. And everyone.
No, that's definitely possible. And, you know, you probably, you know, maybe you read it, or maybe you were too busy, you know, masturbating to your 10th viewing of the debate. But, you know, I did. I'm just teasing you, Bob. I wrote the piece that I wrote for Banter today was really about, you know, just accepting that Mitt Romney won in the optics game, and the fact that what he did by winning is essentially he just sees the narrative. you know, which you know, that works very well for him. And who knows how long it'll last. But the thing about the narrative is it can change. It can change back just as quickly. You know, a big victory for Romney can last. A big victory for anybody, Obama, and, you know, anybody these days, because of the way our media cycle works, it's so rapid fire that, you know, a storyline lasts no longer than 24 hours anymore.
Well, I'd like to find one person who can cite an instance in which Mitt Romney actually zinged the president. Where he, I mean, not in the traditional zinger sense that we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks, but when he actually said, when he actually caught the president and threw him off guard, and or had some sort of a chunk of information that that completely undermined the president's message.
There isn't any. It's not that, you know, and a lot of people have said this, and it's true. It's not that Romney was really, really good. He wasn't bad, you know. He certainly wasn't. God knows the expectations game was that he wouldn't be all that great. But Obama wasn't great. Obama just bring it. And overall, he looked – there was no one knockout blow. There was no one moment. And that's why I said it was boring. But – you know, you watch Obama and it just is, you know, I hate to be one of those body language jackasses. You know, we're bringing in our body language expert. But just, yeah, his body language, sort of the way he looked, just everything about his sort of behavior last night, it was very lackluster. That's the best word I can think of to describe it. He wasn't awful. He wasn't. He was just lackluster.
Well, yeah, I think, I mean, there were times when he was fall 2008 versus John McCain, Barack Obama, and there were some moments here, and these are the areas where he's got to improve for next time. There were some moments when he was closer to the Hillary Clinton, I'm kind of resenting this debate process.
You know what? I was just about to say that, because I think something, have we talked about it here before? I don't think Obama likes politics. And I don't. When I say that, I know I think we did talk about it at one point. And I don't mean that, like, you know, I don't mean that he hates the political system or any of that. I mean the game. You know, I think he's a really serious guy, but I don't think that he's somebody like a Bill Clinton who can govern and at the same time love the game so much that he just puts all of that aside when the time comes to get up there and just be him and take on, you know, his opponent and be, you know, that kind of slick wise ass. Obama's not like that. He isn't. Well, he's much more serious. He's much more into, like I said, he's into governing. And I think that the fact that he's president and the stuff that he's got to deal with, what's going on in his mind at all times, I think he probably did, you know, he probably did think, he didn't relish an opportunity to get up there. And I'm sure he relished an opportunity to make his case to the American public. But yeah, to play the game of sort of debating somebody, yeah, it probably wouldn't be. Lord knows, if I were him, it wouldn't be my favorite thing. But it takes somebody like Clinton to really be, you know, to enjoy it, to get off on it, and yeah, to be, I mean, and by that, to be just freaking great at it.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this in the context of that John Heilman interview,
right?
And like we said at the time, I think, and we kind of agreed about it, that they're like anyone. There are certain aspects of the job that I'm sure the president doesn't like, and I've got evidence to indicate that, and I'm going to get into that later on the show. But there are, you know, but everyone's like that. Everyone's like that with their job. I mean, like I said at the time, I love doing this show. There are certain things that I hate about it. There's certain things, like I hate having to sit down and sort of compile a list of things to talk about. I mean, that's kind of a chore. I just want to dive in and do the show. But the responsibility of conducting a reasonably interesting show includes making sure that I kind of have some ducks in a row with regards to content. Got to make sure we have some content. So got to have a few things lined up. So, but it's kind of a chore. But likewise, I think the president, you don't rise to the level of president of the United States without being a political animal. I mean, it's, you know, this is what he does. This is what he,
of course it is, you know, of course it is. But I do think he's someone who's more interested in governing, and he truly does have a sort of optimistic vision. And, you know, and by the way, there's also the possibility that while I still see some fire in him, that over 4 years, you know, he actually made this comment that he's not the same guy he was 4 years ago. You know, the presidency, you got to imagine everything that he deals with changes him.
Yeah.
You know, it must have changed him drastically.
Well.
And so, yeah, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think yesterday, for example, before the debate, what was the big news yesterday? Turkey invaded Syria. Syria, one of the hot button or hotbed regions of the country that's, you know, that could basically be ground zero for a nuclear exchange at some point. You know, yeah. I mean, these are the things he's got to deal with on a daily basis, as did George W. Bush in 2004, leading up to those debates.
Right. He has to deal with it. And Mitt Romney, by his own admission, is an unemployed guy who's worth, you know, who's worth millions and millions and millions.
Who's been continuously running for president since 2007.
He doesn't have the weight of the world on his shoulders while he's doing this.
Well,
and the best part about it is if it all fell apart tomorrow and, you know, if on November 6th Obama wins, Mitt Romney goes back to his life, which is absolutely spectacular.
Got to take a break for Bubble Genius back after this. Oh, hey. Show is brought to you, as it always is, by BubbleGenius.com. It's women-owned, independently owned, liberally owned. It's vegan. And the stuff that you can buy there for your bath and body and soaps and all sorts of lovely smelling things are actually some of the best things you can ever purchase for those purposes. So please, by all means, and you know, they give a portion of their proceeds and their profits to really good causes, too. So make sure to go to BubbleGenius.com and buy all of your stuff for your bath and body and your shower and all of those things. Here's the latest word from Bubble Genius.
Oh, beautiful for spacious skies.
Nope.
I'll tell you what. $10,000? $10,000 bet?
Nope.
Corporations are people, my friend.
Nope.
This is a completely airtight kettle and mounted on the top of our car.
So I'm running for office, for Pete's sake. I can't have illegals.
Nope.
I'm not concerned about the very poor. We have a safety net there.
Nope.
I like being able to fire people who provide services to me.
Nope.
He's white. He's unscented. He's boring. Put the no back in November with our Mitt Romney Nope on a Rope, Soap on a Rope. This and other awesome political stuff only from BubbleGenius.com. We're Bubble Genius and we approve this message.
Who let the dogs out? Who?
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Don't forget, if you buy your stuff at BubbleGenius.com, and you really damn should, make sure to enter your promo code, which is Bob and Chez, BobAndChez, when you go to checkout, and you get 15% off your entire order from BubbleGenius.com. So it's fact-checking Mitt Romney yesterday. Let's see some of the things that he was just able to blurt out, because, you know, might as well.
Right.
Romney said his website had a quote-unquote lengthy description of his health care plan. In fact, the description is only 369 words. He also said it covers pre-existing conditions. It doesn't. Romney wouldn't cover pre-existing conditions for Americans who fall uninsured for periods of time, which happened to 89 million Americans between 2004 and 2008. Mr. Romney says Mr. Obama doubled the deficit. That is not true. When Mr. Obama took office in January 2009, the CBO had already projected that the deficit for fiscal year 2009, which ended September 30th of that year, would be $1.2 trillion. It ended up being $1.4 trillion. For the just-finished fiscal year of 2012, which ended last week, the deficit is expected to be $1.1 trillion, just under the level in the year he was inaugurated. Measured as a share of the economy, as economists prefer, the deficit has declined more significantly from 10% of the economy's total output in 2009 to 7.3% for 2012. In fact, what they're doing, they're actually projecting that for 2013, the deficit's going to be $914 billion. So from year one to year potentially, I guess you could say year four, would that be?
Mm.
Yeah, that would be a $500 billion dollar decrease in the cut to the deficit. That's pretty big. That's a pretty big deal considering where we were. But President Mitt Romney said the president doubled the deficit last night. Doubled. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I did notice that.
Factcheck.org said Romney said 23 million out of work. People are out of work. It's half that. Factcheck.org said that Romney and running mate Paul Ryan exaggerate when they say, quote, five different studies about the, you know, the Romney tax cut plan. Prove that all of the stated goals of Romney's revenue-neutral tax plan could be accomplished without raising taxes on middle-income taxpayers. Two of the five studies were blog items, and none of three other studies was nonpartisan. Two were written by Romney campaign advisors, and a third was by a former economic advisor to President George W. Bush. On top of that, Mitt Romney last night was saying six different studies. It's actually just five. They've been saying five studies throughout the campaign. Romney said six. He added just another five. You know, it sounded like Father Guido Sarducci talking about who was that, who was sainted that one time. And Father Guido Sarducci said, well, you know, there were three miracles, but two of them were card tricks.
Yeah.
And the Pope just waved the other miracle. He just waved it. That's what Romney was doing with these studies. They were blog items and stuff written by Romney campaign staffers and a guy from the Bush administration. And PolitiFact said, when Romney was talking about the Independent Payment Advisory Board and Medicare, he said Barack Obama, quote, put in place a board that could tell people ultimately what treatments they're going to receive. Mitt Romney was talking about the death panel last night. I mean, he basically was describing the death panel without saying the words death panel. PolitiFact rated this as mostly false. Mostly false. As if there is a small chance that there could be, you know, a death panel.
You never can tell.
I mean, these are just some of the things from last night. That's not even covering all of them. He was doing the Medicare thing. President wants to cut $716 billion from Medicare, scaring the piss out of every senior citizen watching the debates last night. Of course, it's not that at all. He's moving money around, and what it does is actually preserves Medicare for another decade. You know, but there is no regard. We're in the what do they say? It's called the post-truth era.
I love that term. We need to stop that. The post anything era.
It's just.
But yeah. Well, look. You know, you can say anything and get away with it. I mean, it's so odd because you can say anything and not get away with it because so many people. Have access to, you know, so many people are basically their own little media kingmaker these days that it's very hard, very, very hard to lie. But that has, you know, sort of counterintuitively, that's created a climate where you can lie about anything because all that noise bouncing back at you almost doesn't matter after a while.
That's right. Well, yeah.
I said years ago, I said, you know, one of the things about, you know, when I first started writing about media for, you know, Deus Ex Malcontent, I love that. I say that like I'm working for it, my own freaking blog. Well, I mean, I am. It's, you know, whatever. But I said that a while ago. I'm like, you know, one thing about to keep in mind about sort of the new media revolution is that it's created a climate where everything is pretty much transparent. It's very, very difficult to lie, and BS can be sniffed out from a mile away. But the problem is I think we've reached some sort of point of critical mass now where, yeah – the noise that bounces back, there's so much noise that the noise that bounces back from an utter lie is almost meaningless now.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, because there's no one that the Romney side of things takes seriously with regards to fact checking.
That's it, exactly. That's their one of them, yeah. I mean, they have their own people who love them. So once again, it's all noise.
Yeah. I mean, they're locked into what's commonly referred to as the epistemic bubble, like the epistemic closure, in which, you know, a good great example is Mitt Romney on his tax cut plan cites five agencies that say that it's not going to cause a $5 trillion deficit. And all of the five things, they're blogs and Romney people who mm-hmm. are saying these are the experts he's talking about. Not independent, nonpartisan fact checkers or agencies that are tasked with analyzing these things. They're like inside people.
But that's what I'm. That's God. That's a huge discussion, and one we've had before.
Yeah.
Where I truly believe, and I get that, you know, I see things through the prism of media, but I truly believe that we've reached a point now where we have so much media. That you don't really need to listen to anyone that will challenge your biases. You know, you can go to your own fact checkers and blast their findings through a bullhorn. You can, you know, you can go on Fox or you can go on MSNBC and you can find a kind audience. And, you know, obviously I'm not playing the both sides thing. I think
yes,
the right does it. No, I think the right does it far, far more than the left does. And I think the left, you know, I watched both MSNBC and Fox last night. And I do find it interesting that despite Rachel Maddow's obvious, you know, political bent, it's amazing how clear-headed she still analyzes things, you know, how much she takes into consideration both sides of the issue. And I think that's honestly, I think it's really impressive. But yeah, look, you know what I'm saying is you can find a friendly outlet for you. You can find a media outlet or a group of people who think like you, and you can kind of listen and preach only to them. And this is what we've come to. And the problem is nobody draws there's no objective well to draw from anymore. At least, of course, there is. But people won't go there.
OK, well, I have a question for you. We're going to have to do that after a break. Back after this.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
So, I mean, is it a matter of getting opinions that kind of match your own, or do you see liberals seeking out facts that match your own?
I think there are liberals who seek out facts that match their own. I do. But I swear to you, I think that what I see from the conservative side is much, much worse and much more hardcore. And I think conservatives, you know, watching the... A while ago, there was an interview with Jon Stewart that I think Chris Wallace did. And Stewart, you know, he was sort of trying to hammer Stewart over the fact that Stewart had called Fox News basically just one giant propaganda outlet. And Chris Wallace came back with, well, what do you think about, say, the New York Times and all of these, you know, all of these other, and that really is the way they look at it. You know, there's Fox News is the bulwark and everything else, you know, that isn't approved by Fox, Rush Limbaugh, or that kind of thing. All of those media outlets that in their mind had control of the landscape for so long, they're all against conservatives, which is absolute crap. And, you know, Wallace tried to put it off on Stewart and say, you know, well, what about all of them? Well, you know, haven't they been sort of in the tank for liberalism for a long time? And it's like, some of them have, sure. But for the most part, no. A lot of them have been their objective news organizations, and they certainly don't do the kind of crap that Fox does.
That's right. And I didn't see, and I can be corrected on that. I'd welcome a correction on this. But I didn't see the president last night lying about his tax cut plans or his record on tax cuts and using as his evidence basically fabricated studies, blogs and Romney advisors, or in that case, in that hypothetical case, Obama advisors and a former Clinton official.
Right. You're absolutely. And that's what, you know, it's the bubble you were talking about. And that bubble, In honestly, in my mind, and again, I see everything through the prism of media, but I really believe this is true. That bubble is created. The bubble generator is on the top of the Fox News building, the News Corp building on Sixth Avenue in New York City. That is the giant bubble generator. You know, that's the thing that puts out the big ass bubble that that keeps all any other kind of reality out.
Yeah. Well, I think what I'm equally as concerned with is the media bubble. The idea of analyzing how slick Mitt Romney was and attributing a debate victory based on the contrast between Mitt Romney's slick delivery and the president's typically Barack Obama-style delivery, which is it's kind of there's a lot of facets to it, and we might have time to get into that. But I think all of that overshadowed the fact that there was so much lying, mistakes, generalities, misinformation that was spewed out with a wink and a handshake that it was all missed. I mean, no one was actually talking about the fact that Mitt Romney at one point basically admitted to sending jobs over American jobs overseas, shipping factories overseas. Something that has been a point of controversy since the beginning of the this election cycle. What was his involvement at Bain Capital with shipping jobs, American jobs, overseas to places like China? Well, we weren't involved at all. John Sununu was on TV this morning saying, he didn't do any of that.
Jesus, Sununu. Don't even get me started. What a freaking boob that man is.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sununu didn't say that. I watched a video of Sununu. Sununu said that a few weeks ago.
Oh, okay. But I do know that Sununu this morning basically said that Obama was lazy and, you know, the typical shiftless stereotype.
Yeah.
You know, and he's dumb. Which, you know, look, we as bloggers, we as you know, people who are on Twitter, that kind of thing. Yeah, admittedly, I used to beat up on George W. Bush. My issue was never that he was dumb; it was that he was intellectually incurious. That was issue with him, and I found that infuriating. But the idea that somebody like, you know, as high up the food chain and as much of a surrogate for Romney as John Sununu is, calling the president of the United States—I don't care what the hell party he's from—dumb is really, really offensive. Yeah, I mean, that's something I also wrote about. Which, you know, this is panic time. This is when, you know, the madness is – this is just the beginning. If, you know, despite Romney's win, you know, pretty much unequivocal win last night, if this can – you know, if the point spread continues, let's put it that way, use a nice sports analogy. If the point spread continues, you're going to start seeing a lot more of the absolute craziness as this thing kicks and screams down to November 6th.
There was a particularly heated back and forth exchange in the debate last night about this tax deduction for sending jobs overseas. And while there isn't a specific deduction, there's not an exact line item in the tax code that specifically references shipping jobs overseas. But there is a deduction allowed for all ordinary and necessary expenses paid or incurred by the taxpayer in carrying out a business. That includes relocation of the business. So if you spend $1 million sending your entire workforce overseas, firing everybody in America, shipping the plant piece by piece to China, and hiring Chinese workers at a fraction of the cost, you can write off that expense. And for the better part of this last year, the Democrats have been trying to eliminate that as a possibility for deduction. And every single time, the Republicans have filibustered it. So yes, there is you can deduct the cost of shipping your jobs overseas. And when this came up, Mitt Romney said, "Well, that doesn't exist. I don't know what you're talking about. And if there is such a deduction, I maybe need to get a new accountant." Why would that be, Mr. Romney? Because you maybe should have deducted money that you used to ship jobs overseas when you were the Bain Capital? He basically said it. He said it right there. It was a massive reversal. They had been denying that up and down. I mean, there's speculation that he was withholding his tax returns specifically so as to hide his involvement with Bain Capital during the years when they were actively doing it. When they were actively sending jobs over there. During his 47% video, he talked about a factory that he purchased in China where they were, you know, was basically slave labor. It was a sweatshop. They were paid a pittance, Mitt Romney said. They're three people to a bunk. Now, that's what he was talking about. And Mitt Romney still, to this day, owns a piece of that factory. So clearly, he's been involved in the whole point, the very first question of last night's debate was about jobs. How are you going to create American jobs? And right in the midst of this entire hour and a half about job creation in the economy, Mitt Romney said, I wish I would have profited from sending jobs overseas. I wish I would have had that tax break. But this gets missed because he was like, da, da, da. He's like morning zoo DJ. He's like spinning the platters that matter and playing wacky fart sound effects. Fast talking, giving away $1,000 in free cash every 5 minutes to the 10th caller. Really good. That's slick. That's how we want to choose our president, our chief executive. I don't think we're going to have time to get into a discussion of the Obama style. I think there was
Obama style. The Obama video.
Yeah, the Obama style. Or maybe we'll the bunch of stuff we'll talk about on the after party. We'll just move a bunch of stuff over to the after party and get to that tomorrow. But at the top of the show, I played some PBS clips. At first, Mr. Rogers testifying in, I don't know, it was 1969, 1970, maybe 71, testifying at the Senate when Richard Nixon was getting ready to cut the PBS grant in half. And Mr. Rogers went and testified to the Senate, and he ended up getting $20 million for PBS with his testimony alone. You can watch the whole video on YouTube. But it's amazing. It's one of those sort of goosebumps kind of videos to watch where you just gives you the chills, makes you feel really good. And you wonder, boy, I wish we had more voices like that now. Neil deGrasse Tyson tweeted this today, Jez. So cutting PBS support. Now, when I backtrack a second here, Mitt Romney said that one of the things he would cut out of the out of the budget was PBS. Neil deGrasse Tyson tweeted today, PBS accounts for about 0.012% of the budget. Basically, cutting PBS would be the equivalent of deleting text files to make room on your 100 gig hard drive. It's a drop in the bucket. You could cut the entire PBS budget, and it would only reduce the federal budget by 0.012%. That's 1/100th of a percent. It's not about the money that's spent on PBS. It's PBS that the Republicans don't like. Because it's commercial free, it's intellectual, it's a lot of the things they fear.
And it's educational, and they are terrified of education.
That's right. The annual subsidy for PBS is $400.
Because education has been politicized, by the way. It's all, again, everything is politicized.
Of course it is, yeah. The annual subsidy for PBS from the federal government is only $444 million a year. The total federal budget for 2011 was $3.5 trillion. So cutting PBS entirely would create a whopping 0.01% savings. You're a budget wizard, Mr. Romney. Boy, that's really going to make a dent. Let's say that there's a huge public outcry. Mitt Romney goes to cut PBS and the public gets angry and there's protesters and there's speeches on the floor of the Senate. And Romney decides only to cut the PBS budget in half. That would be a 0.006% savings in the federal budget.
By Grabthar's hammer.
By Grabthar's hammer, what a savings.
What a savings.
What kind of subsidies, meanwhile, do Republicans and Mitt Romney support? Corporate welfare. President talked about it last night, gets zero credit for mentioning it. The very liberal Wall Street Journal reported that corporate subsidies cost the taxpayer $92 billion in 2006 alone and might have climbed to $200 billion, including the bailouts and so forth. But let's take the $92 billion number from 2006. $70 billion of that is tied up in tax breaks and direct government handouts to oil and gas companies. That's 35 times the federal budget for all of the programs Mitt Romney named a few weeks ago, including PBS. Whereas PBS struggles to remain on the air, supplementing its budgets with public donations during lean economic times, big oil is turning in record profits. In 2010, BP, Royal Dutch Shell, ConocoPhillips, Chevron, and ExxonMobil received $2 billion in subsidies, the same amount that's paid to PBS, Amtrak, and all these other things that Mitt Romney wants to kill. But those corporations earned $137 billion in total combined profits for that year. Pure profits, 75% higher profits than the previous year, and a total of $1 trillion in profits in the previous 10 years. You know, you're right, Chez. I do wish that the president had mentioned that. I have a feeling that we're going to be seeing more of that kind of thing, a more aggressive President Obama in the subsequent debates. Next week's debate is going to be like a clown show. It's just going to be a pathological.
All the Republican nominees for president are going to show up.
Paul Ryan versus Joe Biden.
Now, yes.
I assure you, this is my prediction for that debate. Joe Biden's going to, after having watched last night's debate, Joe Biden's going to come out with like a big cartoon mallet, like one of those big. One of those big cartoon hammers, and he's just going to bonk Paul Ryan over the head. Take that, USOB! Bonk! You know. He's going to completely overcompensate for last. He's just going to take it upon himself to just do that. And I'm sure it's going to be another debate full of contrasts.
I would say so.
Yeah, yeah. I don't even know what to expect, and quite frankly, the vice presidential debate is so inconsequential. The only bad thing that could ever possibly happen is if it were to somehow reinforce some kind of momentum that was going in one direction or another, it would actually add fuel to that, but it's not going to change anything. Mm-hmm. Paul Ryan repeating the welfare reform lie and the Medicare lie and being deceptive about, you know.
And running down the names of the new names for his band.
That's so funny. All right. Well, the after party is tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely, and we'll see you on the after party. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
By Grabthar's hammer, what a savings.